At noon on KSFR, now looks at the top local news headlines for this Thursday, August 8th. Taos today hosts the third planning session for the state's Legislative Jobs Council, hoping to identify which industry sectors hold the greatest promise for more New Mexico jobs. The previous session was held in Albuquerque, with the council setting a range between 150,000 and 170,000 jobs needed over the next 10 years to ensure the state's economic health. A major focus is finding job sources that lead to goods or services being exported, as those tend to create yet more jobs. An upcoming fourth session of the council will explore where in the state those jobs may be located. Today's meeting at the Taos Convention Center will hear public comment beginning at 3:30. A report from the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation shows New Mexico has one of the lowest rates of hospital usage in the nation. It ranks 44th, with just 84 hospital admissions per 1,000 residents. The online Albuquerque Business First notes that the national average is 112 per 1,000. New Mexico's numbers are also low for the number of patient days spent in hospitals. They're pegged at 414 for every 1,000 versus 600 nationwide. Washington, D.C. tops the list with more than 1,500 inpatient days per 1,000 residents. Summer thunderstorms have inflicted yet more damage on some trees in downtown Santa Fe. Two stately old trees in the Palace of the Governor's Courtyard were found Wednesday morning to have been hit by lightning the night before. The strike also fried telephone connections at nearby museums that required repairs. Though suffering bark and branch damages, the trees are expected to survive. A large tree in Santa Fe's plaza just last month took a direct hit by lightning and has since been cut down. More in today's New Mexican. A Santa Fe woman who spent 5 years in jail for the 2005 stabbing death of a boyfriend has now been charged with aggravated assault for attacking her new boyfriend with a knife. 32-year-old Johanna Diaz is being held at the Santa Fe County Jail following her Tuesday arrest. The son of the man Diaz allegedly attacked with a steak knife reported the incident, though the injuries inflicted appeared to be minor. The Santa Fe National Forest has restored public access to many areas affected by the Horoso and Tres Lagunas fires. The forest cautions that even with burn areas now reopened, many hazards still exist, such as the potential for falling trees, boulders rolling down unstable hillsides, and former trails whose paths have been obscured. Some areas of the Pecos Wilderness will remain off-limits for the foreseeable future, including Holy Ghost Canyons, campgrounds, and recreation residences, due to flash flooding dangers. Meanwhile, James Hogan, the Surface Water Quality Bureau Chief at the New Mexico Environment Department, says runoff in the Pecos watershed contains fine-grained fire-related sediments, but not of serious impact beyond the local fish population.
The impacts primarily at this point are in the Pecos River Canyon, and they're impacting the aquatic life use, so that's the fish in recreational fishing. There's no threat or concern with the sediment that's being washed down in terms of recreation in the water, swimming, and other activities like that. And there's no impacts that I'm aware of downstream, and certainly doesn't impact the use of the water for irrigation.
Santa Fe police are seeking the public's assistance in finding a young man who fired shots at another at Santa Fe Place Mall Tuesday evening. The shooting occurred after a fight in the parking lot, and those involved fled the scene in a black Chevy Impala. As police responded to the incident, they pulled over another car driving away from the scene and arrested a 15-year-old female passenger found with spent bullet casings and drug paraphernalia. Video of the incident has been posted on the police department's Facebook page. The annual Santa Fe County Fair begins in earnest today and runs through Sunday. The event features numerous livestock shows and auctions, as well as food and entertainment. It takes place at the county fairgrounds on Rodeo Road between the Chavez Center and the Santa Fe Rodeo Grounds. City of Santa Fe refuse and recycling pickup crews will begin leaving notices today to thousands of customers, advising them of schedule changes to take effect next week. The schedules are being revised to accommodate the expansion of services to new customers being absorbed into the city by annexation. The changes are mostly on the city's southwest side, along the Rodeo and Zia Corridor, and south along Cerrillos Road. AAA New Mexico says today that New Mexico drivers are now paying an average of $3.52 for a gallon of regular unleaded fuel. That's 3 cents less than last week and 7 cents less than the current national average of $3.59. The latest U.S. Drought Monitor report is out. As might be expected, recent rains in New Mexico have brought improvements overall. Now, just some 20% of the state falls under the category of exceptional drought, down from last week's 24%. The less severe extreme category has also declined by 5% overall and is now pegged at 68% statewide. And weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny today and Friday with highs in the low 80s. There's a 40% chance for afternoon thundershowers today, decreasing slightly to just 30% tomorrow. Look for overnight lows in the mid-50s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature, now 72 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
And back now at the news desk as At Noon segues to today's feature stories. Tonight at 6 p.m., the Pewaukee Valley High School hosts an open house on the Pewaukee Basin Regional Water System. The U.S. Department of the Interior's Bureau of Reclamation is proposing to construct a system to provide drinking water to the pueblos of San Ildefonso, Pewaukee, Nambe, and Tusuki, and to county residents within the basin. The proposed project would divert water from the Rio Grande at the Pueblo de San Ildefonso, as outlined under terms of the 2010 Amit Litigation Settlement Act. That law guarantees access to some 4,000 acre-feet of water annually to residents of the basin. Joining us now is Rusty Rodkey, utilities engineer for water utilities with Santa Fe County. Rusty, you'll be holding forth at this meeting tonight. Let's begin by having you give us your overview of the project.
This is going to settle 50 years of legal limbo that the water rights have been endowed or they've been challenged back and forth in court. And it's going to consist of 160 miles of pipelines, various sizes, including the distribution lines into homes. And it's going to have several water tanks. One of the key features is going to be aquifer storage and recovery wells. And that's going to allow for continued use even during droughts. It'll be sort of a below-the-ground reservoir so that it'll minimize evaporation.
And the project is somewhat analogous to our Buckman Direct Diversion Project in that there'll be an insertion point along the Rio Grande and then storage and treatment facilities before water's distributed to users, yes?
That's exactly right, Dan. It's so you could think of it as Buckman's little brother because it's 4,000 acre-feet versus about 9,000 acre-feet for Buckman. So it's about half the size, but because of the way costs are, it'll be about $200 million. So it'll be similar in the cost to Buckman was 10 years ago.
And we're talking about an eventual build-out of some 160 miles of pipe?
Exactly. And there's going to be a lot of issues there because the best place to put them usually is in a road, and so that it's on the public access and the public easement. And so in the Tusuki Valley and also in Pewaukee, there's a lot of places where that's going to cause some inconvenience for folks in getting around. And so what we want to do is schedule those things so that over the next 5 or 6 years when we're going to be building it out, that it is we minimize the inconvenience to folks.
And when it comes to approaching folks for permission to dig on their land and install pipe, is there leeway in the configuration of the system for those who may be opposed?
Well, there are different aspects to that. One is that if people opt into the settlement, when they opt in to the settlement agreement, that's going to happen this fall, and that's going to be a letter from the state engineer office, which is going to be an order to show cause, And if they opt into the settlement, then their water service will come to their door as part of the construction. And so what's going on is that if they opt out later, they'll have to pay to bring the water service to them. And so there's an incentive there.
What's the current status of water supplies to the area?
Well, right now, most folks are on private wells, and especially the non-county resident or the non-Pueblo residents that are the county residents as well. They're on private wells that are being impacted by their septic tanks and by their neighbor's septic tanks. And there's been a lot of studies on groundwater quality in the area, and there are some significant nitrate and other pollution issues. And, of course, nitrates in your water is harmful to small children and the elderly, especially. You can get the blue baby syndrome, and it interferes with the lungs functioning properly. So it's an important public health issue, and the whole idea of this is to help resolve that.
And the best guesstimate of a timeline, when could this possibly be in operation?
Well, it's going to take probably 10 years for it to be completely online, and it's going to start closer to the river. Those facilities will be put online sooner, so we're talking about San Ildefonso Pueblo area, and then the Hakona land grant, and then the Powaki area, and then Nambe and Tasuki after that.
Tonight you meet at Powaki Valley High School. Some days ago you had a meeting in Tasuki. Other meetings coming up?
Right. They haven't been scheduled yet because what we're waiting on is the district court has to issue their order to show cause. And the language of that has been drafted, and it's just about to be submitted to the judge, and then it depends on the judge's time frame of when that is actually going to come out. But we're anticipating this fall we'll have some more public meetings. And at each of these public meetings, there's been a great cooperation between the Bureau of Reclamation, Santa Fe County, and the State Engineer Office, because all these issues are interrelated, and people have to make a decision of if they're going to be part of the settlement agreement, then they need to sign the paper and send it in, and there's different statuses of their well depending on what year it was completed in, and there's different options there. So it's complicated enough that there needs to be a lot of education with the public, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this on the air. Now, there's one other thing. If you opt into the settlement agreement, there's a $2,750 fee to connect to the county water system, and that's to pay for your meter and the installation and the maintenance of that. That fee will be paid by a $4 million fund that's been set up from the state of New Mexico to encourage people to do that. And so round numbers, if it's a $3,000 benefit and there's $4 million, then there's about 1,000 people that are going to benefit from that, and it's first come, first serve.
And some final thoughts from you today on this?
What we really would like to see is to have the cooperation of the communities. We are engaging each community, each area. It's been, like I say, 50 years of legal limbo and litigation. A lot of people that I've talked to at the public meetings say that, you know, the lawyers have gotten the best of this for a long, long time. Generations of lawyers have had to fight over this. Let's settle it now. This is a great opportunity. It literally took an act of Congress to get us this far. So please, think about it. Make an informed decision. You never miss your water until the well runs dry or until it proves to be bad from testing.
Rusty Rodke, utilities engineer with Water Utilities for Santa Fe County. Many thanks for talking to us here at KSFR.
Thank you, Dan.
And at noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Programming on KSFR is underwritten in part by Medlin Mechanical, a full-service plumbing company specializing in green energy solutions for homes and business in the Santa Fe area for over 5 years. Medlin Mechanical's geothermal and solar systems are designed to cut energy costs and reduce carbon footprint. And tax credits for new systems are available through 2016. To learn more, visit medlinmechanical.com or call 577-8087. That's 577-8087.
18 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. A relatively new field of study in biology is called epigenetics. It looks at how DNA is reprogrammed at the molecular level in response to social interactions and environmental factors. Leading research on the topic is the Los Alamos National Lab and their Theoretical Biology and Biophysics Group. Carissa Sanbat-Matsu is one of the group's principal investigators and joins us now. Carissa, with patience and kindness, give us your overview of epigenetics.
Okay, so epigenetics is sort of a revolution that's been going on in molecular biology, and it's kind of turning traditional concepts in genetics on their head. And so to understand epigenetics, it helps to know a little bit about genetics. And so in genetics, you know, DNA is traditionally thought of as the blueprint of life, and that it's hardwired into your genes, and your genes are thought to be basically immutable, you know, apart from a few fluke mutations that might happen here and there. But what we're discovering is that these flukes are really just the tip of the iceberg. And so in epigenetics, what people are uncovering is that there's this complex layer of circuitry that turns genes on and off, effectively programming the DNA. So in this sense, the DNA is it's not immutable, but it's actually highly programmable.
In general knowledge of biology, it's a commonly held assumption that DNA changes very slowly over time. But now you're speaking of change that occurs at a much faster pace, yes?
Yeah. So one way to think of it is to use like an analogy. So for example, one analogy might be like your iPhone or your Android or your smartphone. And so in this analogy, the DNA would be the hardware or the iPhone, and then the epigenetic program would be like the app that you run. And then what the app accomplishes would be the cell fate. So as far as how fast things change, you know, the sort of old school DNA mutations would be like new generations of iPhones coming out. But the epigenetic programs would be like new apps that could be released, or actually the apps could be reprogrammed by, like, for example, changing the settings on the app. And so the epigenetic programs are, they're sort of continuously being revised, you know, while you're in the womb, you know, right after you're born and throughout your life. You know, many of the changes take place, you know, during embryo development while the baby is in the womb. So over the course of 9 months, you know, a vast amount of programming happens. And then in the first 2 years of your life, the DNA is still being programmed. So just over 2 years, a lot of permanent changes can be embedded into your DNA.
And it is proper to describe this as a new field of study within molecular biology, correct?
Yes. So this has been going on mostly in the past decade, in particular the past 5 years or so. And what's happened is that breakthroughs in DNA sequencing technology have really just fueled the field of epigenetics. And so with the vast amounts of DNA sequencing, we can also get epigenetic sequencing. And so not only can people sequence entire genomes, but they can get the epigenetic sequencing, you know, as a function of time for many different cell types and many different conditions. And so really just in the last 3 years or so, this big explosion in DNA sequencing has really sort of caused a rapid growth in epigenetics research.
And of nature versus nurture, is the amount of change that occurs in DNA directly proportionate to the amount of influence by the environment?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And so I think to some extent that's true. And, you know, one of the classic examples are studies in rodents that have shown that lack of nurturing behavior by the mother actually reprograms their baby's DNA, and it permanently affects the baby's response to stress for their whole life. And then one of the fascinating things that if there's not enough nurturing to the baby shortly after the baby is born, the grandkids are also permanently affected by this. So it propagates through the generations. And like just in the past year, there are many studies that have been coming out for humans, like based on human placenta data, that are beginning to confirm these data in rodents.
Does the research possibly point to changes in DNA that could contribute to evolutionary steps forward at a much faster pace, say, than conventional wisdom would otherwise indicate?
That's a very interesting question, and that's sort of at the cutting edge of the field now, I would say. And so, you know, some of these changes have been observed in non-human animals to last over 10 generations. I think it's too early to say if these are going to be permanent changes in terms of evolutionary terms, but I think many people believe they could be.
Carissa Sanbunmatsu with the Los Alamos National Lab, many thanks for joining us here today at noon. Carissa will be giving a talk on this subject next Tuesday at the New Mexico Museum of Natural History and Science in Albuquerque. A lecture here in Santa Fe is scheduled for the James A. Little Theater on Thursday, August 22nd. And we have more of At Noon coming up for you in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM. One way to reduce your power bill each month is to replace old light bulbs with compact fluorescent light bulbs, or CFLs. These bulbs use 75% less energy and last 10 times longer than traditional bulbs. CFL bulbs are available at most retailers. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook, or visit PNM online at pnm.com.
Two legendary performers from the stage and screen return to Santa Fe. Kay Ballard and Lilian Montevecchi star in Still Around, an all-new review featuring the best of Broadway and New York cabaret at the Lenzic on August 8th. Featuring an 11-piece orchestra conducted by David Geist, Still Around is a brand new production filled with music, dance, and comedy. For tickets, call 988-1234 or visit lenzic.org. The Lenzic is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
And taking a look at some other news now, about 1,500 people have been forced to flee their homes in Southern California as a wildfire rages out of control. Two firefighters and a civilian have been injured near Banning since the fire started yesterday. The rapidly spreading blaze currently covers about 10,000 acres and is only 10% contained. Fire officials say 15 structures have been damaged, and aerial news footage is showing several houses burning. About 1,000 firefighters are said to be on scene and are supported by 6 air tankers and 13 helicopters. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has authorized the use of federal funds to assist with fighting that blaze. Stocks on Wall Street have been having a good day, being boosted by better-than-expected jobless claims figures and by strong trade data from China. Latest figures show that U.S. weekly jobless claims increased by less than expected to 333,000. And earlier in the day, data from China showed strong growth in both their exports and imports. And taking a look at the big board on Wall Street at midday, the Dow is currently up 44 points at 15,515, the NASDAQ up 19 at 3,673, and the S&P 500 is up 8 points. It stands at 1,699. 1227 here in the KSFR newsroom. As we approach the bottom of the hour, it's the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I wanted to wait for the excitement to die down, and it seems to have done so, but I didn't want too much time to pass before thanking you for the great honor you have bestowed on me. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that in the Santa Fe Reporter's Best of Survey, I would be voted Best Radio Show. What? I wasn't? Mary Charlotte? Well, my mistake, an honest mistake, so I guess it's thank you for voting me the number 2 radio show in Santa Fe. Honey Harris, number 2? You know, at the Olympics, they have 3 medals for every event, and athletes are proud to win 3rd place, the bronze medal. As am I. Julia Goldberg? Well, I guess the good news is that no videos of me dancing half-naked at the Reporter's Best of Party have surfaced. Really? 500,000 views? Call my agent. For KSFR, I'm the soon-to-be-famous Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude this edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you. And as always, we hope you join us.